So imagine waking up in a sterile hospital room.
Okay.
There is this gentle light shining above you, and you're suddenly told that a cybernetic device has been permanently bolted into your skull.
Which is horrifying on its own, honestly.
Right. But then you find out who performed this illicit surgery. It's not some rogue AI or, a shady street doctor. It is literal biblical black
I mean,
angels.
in almost any other novel, that premise alone would be the entire plot.
Exactly. But in the text we are diving into today, that is literally just page one.
Yeah, it really doesn't waste any time.
Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are tearing apart an excerpt from a wildly imaginative, incredibly dense narrative simply titled Texty.
Specifically, a section marked by the author, Toby Huldtoo.
Right. And if you love a good aha moment, you are going to appreciate how this text completely breaks the rules of traditional storytelling.
It really does. It's totally unhinged.
It's like trying to navigate a city where the zoning laws change every single block. You step out of a cyberpunk hospital and you literally trip over a high fantasy horse.
It is the absolute definition of narrative whiplash.
Yeah.
And that is exactly what makes it so compelling to analyze. What makes this text so fascinating to dissect isn't merely what happens to the protagonist, but really it's the sheer velocity of the genre shifts. The author forces you, the listener, to constantly dismantle and rebuild your understanding of the world, like
Wow.
literally scene by scene. It is a masterclass in calculated disorientation.
Calculated disorientation is a great way to put it because it starts out almost deceptively normal.
Yeah, lulls you in.
So let's look at the chronological opening. Our protagonist, Toivo, wakes up in this gentle light. He's resting on a heart-shaped white hospital bed.
Which is a bit quirky.
Right, a bit weird. But
Yeah.
it's in a facility called the White Heart Temple. And then a character named John walks into the room and delivers some good news.
The mother's surgery.
Exactly. He says Toivo's mother just had a successful surgery. So aside from the heart-shaped bed, this reads like a standard medical drama.
Right, you have a hospital, a post-op update, a recovering family member.
You feel grounded.
But that comfort is a complete bait and switch. Because within the space of a breath, the medical drama evaporates.
Oh, completely.
And we are thrown into intense psychological and body horror.
Completely thrown because Toivo suddenly starts hearing these visceral, demonic voices echoing inside his head.
Out of nowhere.
And John, who is just delivering normal, optimistic news, drops a massive, horrifying bombshell. He casually explains that Black Angels have installed a device inside Toivo's skull.
And it is crucial to note that this isn't a device they can just, extract.
No, not at all.
John specifies that it is irremovable. The doctors tried, but they failed.
Which is terrifying.
The medical staff is reduced to just managing the symptoms. They can only alleviate the agony with medicine.
Okay, let's unpack this because this feels like someone smashed the Matrix together with a Sunday school parable.
That's a great comparison.
I mean, we are dealing with intense sci-fi body horror, a literal technological device physically implanted in human bone. But the architects of this trauma are Black Angels. And then John tells Toivo, "Be strong, the Savior will help you out of the dark valleys of your mind."
It's wild.
How do we even begin to reconcile a hard science implanted tech device with literal black angels and spiritual saviors?
What's fascinating here is how the text immediately establishes a universe where science and the supernatural are completely indistinguishable from one another.
They're just the same thing.
Exactly. In our world, we separate the clinical hospital from the spiritual temple. Here they are merged into one entity, the White Heart Temple.
Well, yeah.
The author is intentionally blurring the lines between physical, neurosurgical trauma, and esoteric spiritual warfare.
So the medicine they give him is physical.
But the ailment, these dark valleys of the mind, is distinctly spiritual. By doing this right on page one, the narrative signals to you that the standard rules of reality simply do not apply.
It sets up this expectation for a very specific type of story. You brace yourself for this dark, gritty cyberpunk battle against demonic tech implants in a dystopian hospital,
Yeah,
right?
you're ready for the neon lights.
Yeah, the psychological torment. But then the author just hits the fast forward button and completely changes the channel.
It's so jarring.
We jump exactly 1 month ahead, and that oppressive psychological trauma is just gone.
Replaced by what can only be described as peak pastoral high fantasy,
Totally.
the transition is violent in its abruptness.
It really is.
Yeah.
So Toivo is visited by a character simply called Angel Face.
Great name.
Right. And Angel Face brings him a majestic white horse named Helmy, which translates to pearl. Mm-hmm. Toivo gets on this horse and takes a ride through a fell village, and the imagery is incredibly lush.
It's very vivid.
We are talking about a pearl fountain shaped like a lily flower. He crosses a pristine white marble bridge where wild salmon are actively leaping in the river below.
Just idyllic.
The architecture features quaint log cottages with grass roofs and little lanterns in the windows. It's pure, unadulterated, Lord of the Rings style piece.
Which creates a tremendous sense of aesthetic calm, sharply contrasting with the invasive demonic voices from the previous scene. It lulls the reader into a new rhythm.
But just as you're settling into this peaceful rhythm, we get the twist.
The mundane twist.
The completely mundane twist. During this majestic ride through the fell village, Toivo makes some very specific stops.
Yeah.
First, he stops at Ula's flower shop, which, you know, fits the fantasy vibe.
Sure.
But then he parks his horse at the local smoothie saloon.
Which is just so funny to me.
I mean, come on. You are riding a white horse through a magical village with leaping salmon and pearl lily fountains, and you stop for a smoothie.
Right.
Is the author just messing with us here?
It definitely feels absurd, but it's actually a brilliant use of bathos.
Bathos, right.
Deliberately undercutting the sublime and fantastical with the ridiculous and ordinary.
Uh-huh.
It serves a very specific narrative purpose. By anchoring these high fantasy aesthetics in relatable, modern, mundane elements, like grabbing a blended food drink, the story grounds itself. It makes this wildly imaginative world feel lived in and ordinary to the protagonist.
So it's a way of saying, yes, there are angels and magic swords, but people still get thirsty on a Tuesday afternoon.
Precisely. Mm. And for you, the listener, it provides a devastatingly effective false sense of security.
Oh, because you're relaxed.
Exactly. Because the juxtaposition is so charming and slightly comedic, your guard drops completely right before the inciting incident actually hits.
And that false security shatters before he even finishes his drink.
Literally.
Because we transition right from this peaceful, slightly absurd afternoon into one of the oldest, darkest tropes in fantasy literature.
The mysterious stranger in the tavern.
Yes. Except, of course, the tavern is the smoothie saloon.
The aesthetic shifts back to noir or dark fantasy instantly.
So Toivo leaves his white horse, Helmy, in the guest stable outside. And the moment he does, the sky just blackens.
Very dramatic.
A heavy, violent thunderstorm rolls in out of nowhere. Toivo walks into the saloon, and the lively atmosphere is dead quiet. Sitting at a corner table, cloaked in shadows and smoking a pipe, is a lone figure. Lightning flashes outside, illuminating this figure's scarred face.
Classic.
And a strange, ominous voice comes from the man, saying, "I am the shadow? I know what you were looking for, Toivo."
We recognize this immediately. The herald arrives to push the hero out of his comfort zone.
But the execution of this trope is incredibly compressed. Like, the shadow doesn't offer a long, winding backstory.
No, there's no monologue.
Right. He simply puts a green emerald ring and an old treasure map on the table. Another flash of lightning illuminates the saloon, and the shadow just vanishes.
Poof.
Gone, leaving Toivo with these cryptic items. And the map itself is wild. It literally outlines the entire rest of the plot in one go.
It's amazing.
It visually lists Tulip Village, a cemetery, a witch and a curse, an emerald catacomb, and a mountain cave with traps.
It's a literal roadmap of the story's future, handed over with zero exposition.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Toivo grabs the glowing emerald ring, slips it into his pocket, and then he grabs an umbrella.
I love the umbrella.
We have a magical glowing ring, a mystical map outlining a perilous quest against a cursed witch, and an umbrella.
Yeah.
It's such a wonderfully practical, anti-heroic detail in the middle of this high-stakes fantasy moment. It's not a legendary shield. It's just a guy who doesn't want to get soaked in the rain.
If we connect this to the bigger picture of the text pacing, that umbrella is crucial characterization.
Right.
But more importantly, let's look at the function of that map. The map literally lays out the entire narrative trajectory in a single visual sentence.
It's like a table of contents.
Exactly. The author is actively respecting the reader's time by skipping the slow, meandering discovery phase entirely. We don't have to watch Toivo wander from town to town asking NPCs for directions to the witch.
No random encounters.
Right. The author compresses the sprawling hero's journey into a hyper-efficient bulleted list. It mimics the artificial accelerated pacing of a video game speedrun.
Because he has the route perfectly laid out, the narrative shifts yet again. We move from a sprawling fantasy into a hyper-focused gothic puzzle box.
and we keep moving fast.
Yeah. Following the map's instructions, Toivo walks through the rain to the local cemetery, entering through these imposing white swan-shaped gates, and heads straight to his father's grave.
Notice how quickly the tone darkens again. The whimsy of the smoothie saloon is completely erased by the solemnity of the graveyard.
And it gets incredibly heavy on the symbolism. Inside a withered rose at his father's grave, Toivo finds a golden key and a poem.
Right.
The poem reads, "The road to the cross leads through the grave. Death is victory, Christ is life."
Very intense.
This message acts as a cipher, directing him deeper into the cemetery to the family catacombs.
It's a heavy, direct injection of the Christian allegory we first saw in the opening scene at the White Hart Temple.
Oh, tying it back to the angels.
Exactly. The narrative is reminding you that the spiritual stakes are just as high as the physical ones.
So Toivo navigates to his family's tomb, uses the golden key to unlock the heavy door, and pushes it open. Inside, he finds four coffins. Three are plain brown, and one is pristine white. He uses that same golden key on the white coffin, opens it, and inside is a sword.
Not what you'd expect in a coffin.
Not at all. It features an ivory pearl handle and an incredibly sharp blade. But the message hidden under the sword is what really throws a wrench into our understanding of the characters.
Yeah, this part is wild.
It reads, "To the White Hart, Toivo, your mother."
Which fundamentally subverts everything we were told in the very first scene.
Exactly my thought. The mother, who was initially presented as this fragile, passive patient needing major surgery in the hospital, is now leaving ancient, pearl-handled swords in white coffins in a Gothic family tomb.
It's a huge shift.
It completely rewrites her legacy. And then Toivo has this sudden, visceral realization. Looking at the weapon, he suddenly realizes that a character named Elisa has been taken by the witch.
Just out of nowhere.
And the shock of this unprompted realization is so intense that he literally faints on the floor of the catacomb.
He passes out entirely.
So what does this all mean? I mean, he solves this intense Gothic riddle. He finds a deadly weapon left by a mother whose backstory just turned militant. But it's the sudden thought of this person, Elisa, that makes him pass out.
Right.
Who is Elisa to him? That this is the breaking point. The text hasn't even mentioned her before this exact second.
This is a perfect example of how the text demands you, the listener, do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, you have to piece it together.
The author is contrasting the overt Christian symbolism, the father's poem about the cross and finding victory through death, with the martial, violent legacy of the mother who leaves a literal instrument of death.
It's a striking contrast.
But instead of spoon-feeding us a three-page exposition dump about how Toivo feels about this dichotomy, or who Elisa actually is, the text simply shows us his visceral, physical reaction. He faints.
This boom, lights out.
The emotional gap is left intentionally wide. We have to infer that Elisa is someone of monumental importance to Toivo. Perhaps a sister, a wife, or a daughter.
Yeah.
Because the mere realization that the witch has her is far more shocking to him than finding his mother's secret sword in a grave.
The narrative just trusts you to accept the emotional weight without the backstory.
Completely.
Which is crucial because we don't have time to dwell on it. When Toivo wakes up from fainting, the story essentially uses a fast travel mechanic to skip all the boring logistics and launch us directly into the climax.
Fast travel is an apt description.
Mm.
The pacing accelerates exponentially here, abandoning any pretense of a traditional travel montage.
He wakes up not in the catacombs, but in a mountain motel room with a pounding headache.
Of course.
The pearl-handled sword is sitting on the table, and there's a new letter. A new poem from his mother.
Another one.
It says, "In the tooth of the mountain, in a black-colored cabin, the witch casts spells, throwing a dark shadow over the village. Elisa is somewhere in there. Take your pearl sword and strike with it."
Notice how the mother's role has completely shifted now.
Yeah, she's in charge.
She is no longer the passive patient, nor just a mysterious figure leaving clues. She is the active, commanding voice driving the climax. Mm. She is issuing the direct military orders.
Take your sword and strike. And the moment he reads those words, the final set piece kicks in. A terrible witch's laugh literally echoes through the air.
It's very cinematic.
The sky turns pitch black again, and it starts pouring rain. A black horse carriage arrives in the motel yard, and who is sitting inside? The scarred face of the shadow.
The herald returns, this time to act as the ferryman, escorting the hero to the final threshold.
Toivo straps the pearl sword to his belt. He puts the emerald ring on his finger, which now begins to glow with this intense, piercing green light in the darkness, and he steps into the carriage.
Right into the fray.
The shadow hands him a second map, this one completely black. And then, as a bolt of lightning flashes, Toivo is teleported.
Instantly.
The carriage doesn't drive. They are instantly transported directly to the base of a mountain cliff, right in front of a man-sized cave entrance. I mean, the author literally teleports him to the dungeon entrance.
Yeah.
It is exactly like the final boss level of a video game.
Right.
It's like the narrative itself is looking at its watch and saying, we don't have time for a 3-day carriage ride up a mountain. Let's just get to the sword fight.
This raises an important question regarding the true role of the shadow in this narrative.
Okay, what do you mean?
Throughout the text, the shadow acts as the ultimate facilitator. He provides the initial map in the smoothie saloon. He provides the carriage at the motel. He provides the second black map.
Yeah, he's handing out all the quest items.
And he seemingly triggers the teleportation. He does absolutely everything required to get Toivo to the threshold.
Mm-hmm.
But the text makes it explicitly clear through the mother's poem that Toivo is the one who must ultimately strike with the pearl sword.
So the shadow is essentially a supernatural Uber driver.
Pretty much.
He can drop Toivo off at his destiny, but he can't fight the witch for him.
Precisely. The author trims all the fat from the traditional hero's journey, leaving only the most vital, impactful beats. The call to action, the acquisition of the weapon, the arrival at the threshold, and the impending confrontation.
It is truly a marvel of narrative density. Just think about the sheer ground we've covered in this short excerpt from Texty.
It's dizzying.
In just a few scenes, we went from waking up with cyberpunk brain implants and demonic voices in a clinical hospital to riding a white horse to a mundane smoothie saloon.
Don't forget the umbrella.
The umbrella. Right, to solving a gothic graveyard riddle for a hidden sword, to taking a teleporting carriage ride to fight a cursing witch in a mountain cave, it is absolutely breathless.
And that breathless quality is exactly why it works.
Really?
Yeah. Sometimes the most rewarding reads are the ones that refuse to be boxed into a single, clean category. This text keeps you completely on your toes.
It sure does.
It forces your brain to rapidly synthesize wildly different concepts. Angels and tech, smoothies and shadow figures, Christian crosses and martial swords. It demands that you act as an active participant, constantly building the world and filling in those massive emotional gaps yourself.
It demands your full attention, or you get left behind. But before we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final lingering question to ponder.
Ooh,
a thought that builds on everything we've just discussed, but goes right back to the very first scene.
The hospital.
Yes, the hospital. Think about what John told Toivo in that room. He said the Black Angels permanently installed a device in Toivo's skull. And the only way to alleviate the demonic voices was with medicine to help him out of the dark valleys of his mind.
The physical chemical treatment for his spiritual mental ailment.
Right. So consider this. What if this entire fantastical adventure, the magical fell village, the glowing green ring, the teleporting shadow, the pearl sword, the gothic riddles.
Yeah.
What if none of it is actually happening in the physical world?
Oh, wow.
What if this entire hyper-accelerated epic quest is just the medicine interacting with that demonic device?
That is wild.
What if Toivo is still lying on that heart-shaped white hospital bed?
Yeah.
And his brain is generating this high-speed, genre-bending, heroic fantasy as a complex coping mechanism.
Like a hallucination.
Exactly. He's fighting a metaphorical witch to survive the very real, very dark valleys of his own mind.
It completely recontextualizes the entire narrative.
Mm.
The confusing, murky landscape we've been navigating becomes a vivid, high-stakes picture of a mind actively at war with itself.
When you look at the structure of this story, you aren't seeing clean binary lines of traditional sci-fi or fantasy.
No, not at all.
You're seeing the messy, beautiful, completely unhinged reality of a story that refuses to be just one thing. It's a testament to how flexible storytelling can be when you strip away the rules.
Absolutely.
And honestly, that's what makes diving into texts like this so incredibly worth it.